Welcome back to the show on a Tuesday as we make our way into the first week of college football season, 2 days away from the first game of college football season, and more reports of expansion are going on all over the college football landscape. Yet last night, the New York Times reported that Texas A&M sent its official letter to the Big 12 notifying the conference of its exodus from the conference. But today, however, there are other reports that say that that did not happen. So we really don't know what's going on there. But the bottom line is it widely expected that soon Texas A&M will leave the Big 12 and apply for membership of the SEC. The person who I regard as the number one source on all things conference expansion, Chip Brown of OrangeBloods.com, said that within days, Texas A&M will, in fact, withdraw from the Big 12 and apply for membership with the SEC. So I think that it will happen soon. So a lot of news being made on that front. And, of course, this is the first week of college football season, and I am joined, as I am every Tuesday, by the college football professor here on the program, going to bring us shed some light on this year's college football season, as well as preview week one. What are the matchups you're interested in? We'll make some predictions as we finally get down to the nitty-gritty of the season. Professor, it's good to see you.
What a wonderful thing it is that now we can see it just over the hilltop. College football. We're ready for some football, aren't we, Jacob?
I am actually ready to have results on the field rather than just talking about it and analyzing it. And I think you have some interesting insight into the upcoming season that you came to share with us today. I will make one note that of all of our guests, the professor is the most meticulously prepared. So I don't even know why I show up to the show. He has all the numbers and facts and figures, and I just turn it on and turn it off. But Professor, what do you have for us?
Well, as August moves into September, there are three things which serious football fans can agree. One, we are ready for the season to begin. Second, the team with the most talent and the best coaching usually wins. And third, the football sometimes takes abnormal bounces. Now, while we agree that the team with the most talent and the best coaching usually wins, we could look at a number of factors that impact the game. For instance, Jacob, there would be the awe factor. And I think you'd see that played out, someone having to go to play at Ohio State or playing at Oklahoma, or the tradition of Notre Dame or Alabama, or in Baton Rouge on Saturday night at LSU, or the Big House with 100,000 Wolverines looking down at you. There are many other factors to consider, though. Luck factor, field condition, time of day, key injuries. But, Jacob, if we could, which I think football ought to be fun, just for the fun of it, let's think about the crowd factor. Now, for years, I've wondered, is it more difficult to go on the road and play in front of large, hostile crowds, or is it easier to go and play in front of small numbers of fans as the visitor? If it is a factor, even if it's a small factor, let's consider the crowd factor on the road in college football.
Okay.
Now, we'll take the, let's just say, the consensus top 20 teams by the different preseason polls that have come out.
So you're taking these from the AP, the coaches, that
polls? Yeah, just a consensus.
Okay.
And what we're going to do is we're going to take that top 20 consensus. And then when we get through with that, we're going to re-rank them according to the number of fans that they have to play in front of on the road. We call that hostile crowds or playing in difficult places. So let's think. All right, top 20. We're looking at Oklahoma, Alabama, Oregon, Boise State, LSU, Florida State, right on down the line, down through Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. So that's top 20.
Sure.
Now, we want to re-rank those. And the re-ranking will take place by deciding who plays in front of the largest crowds. For instance, taking two examples out of the top 20, Virginia Tech will play five road games. And in those five road games, they will play in front of an average crowd of 44,993. Oklahoma State, for instance, will play in front of an average crowd of 64,999. Now, let's think about this. Take Virginia Tech's road schedule, which includes three in a row, Marshall, Wake Forest, and Duke. Now, if you took the crowds at Marshall, Wake Forest, and Duke and added those up, they would equal what you would play in front of in one day at Bryant-Denny or in Texas or Ohio State or Michigan or Penn State or Tennessee. So you see what I'm talking about, the numbers of fans that you play in front of on the road. And if that's a factor, which I think it is, even though it may be small, we're seeing how this might impact what happens.
Well, that is an interesting variable in all of this. And I think Boise State, don't you think they would probably lead the nation in terms of how many they play against week in and week out, right?
Well, they finished number 20 out of our poll. And for instance, they play in front of an average number of fans of 43,699.
That's higher than I thought, actually.
Yeah, all right. And then, for instance, Alabama, who is the number one team in our re-ranking, they play in front of the largest average crowd. They play in front of an average of 79,788.
Okay. Now, how did you come to the conclusion that Alabama plays in front of a different crowd than Florida? Is this based on this year's schedule of stadiums?
That's correct. Okay. Taking this year's schedule of stadiums and taking the stadium capacity, thinking that if these are top 20 teams, when they come to town, they're going to be filled up.
Right.
So you're taking what those stadiums will hold and dividing it out among all the different games that they play and coming up with an average crowd that they will play in front of. For instance, Alabama is number one, but Florida is number two.
Mm-hmm.
Florida and Ohio State is number three, Nebraska four, South Carolina, LSU, Arkansas, Wisconsin. And we find Oklahoma at number 11, West Virginia at number 17, and, of course, Virginia Tech number 19, and Boise State number 20. TCU, by the way, is 18, so I thought they might be last, but they play in front of an average number of hostile fans of 46,743.
Well, I guess, too, if you're a small school, a lesser-known school, and TCU's not, but other teams are, you play in front of BCS conference stadiums too. If you're like Kent State plays at Alabama and so forth, so that does, I guess, bring your average up slightly.
Yes. But we're looking at the whole season, mm-hmm. all of their road games. So wouldn't you think that it's more difficult? And I'm not trying to put one team above the other, but wouldn't you think it's more difficult for, let's say, Arkansas to go and play at Florida and in front of a large crowd of 80-something thousand fans compared to, let's say, Memphis State or Memphis University now going to play at Southern Miss.
Yeah, there's no question, yeah. And I think, too, beyond the number or quantity of fans, you have just an environmental factor that is there, too. I've heard from people who've been out there that Oregon is an extremely tough place to play. We all know LSU, Alabama, Florida here in the SEC are tough places to play. And then there are some that have a tremendous amount of fan capacity in the stadium, but they aren't as daunting as of a challenge to play there. Like, comes to my mind, a lot of people have said Michigan isn't that tough of a place to play. Now, it's got 100-some-odd thousand fans.
9,000, yeah. Over 109,000.
So, but a lot of people have said it's not the toughest place to play in the Big Ten.
Well, it's interesting that we know that there's more intensity in some stadiums than others, and a lot of subjective things. But it was the old professor just wanted to pull out some facts and look at facts, not just people's opinion or what somebody thinks or what somebody has decided, and just using facts. And we were just using that as one factor. Remember, we agree, the best team with the best coaching usually wins.
Right. Well, I think that illustrates, too, how tough it is to go in the SEC and play on the road. And if you have an inexperienced quarterback, and I'm looking at several teams in the league that do right now, that could be a very a stiff challenge for you. And LSU, they don't have an inexperienced quarterback in Jarrett Lee, but he hasn't had the experience that Jordan Jefferson has experienced over the last couple of years. Okay, let's move on to your next point.
Okay, I wanted us to think, as we look ahead a little bit, and think about, here we go. We're ready for the football season to begin. And I wanted to just take 10 games, and I'll do this each week, just pick out 10 games that I will, you know, pick a winner. And I'm not going to go by point spreads or any of that, just going to say win or lose,
right?
Because that's just the way I'd like to do it. So you ready for us to go?
You name the games, and we'll give the best opinion we know how, which I wouldn't put any stock in what we say.
Okay, the first one. I'm picking Texas Tech to defeat Texas State. Now, you say, why is that game leading off number one? Well, that's the Tuberville-Franchione meeting. So here are two guys who have gone head-to-head in bigger situations. Now here they're coming along to begin the football season against each other on the field. So that's my number one pick.
Well, how'd you know Texas State was my upset of the week over Texas Tech? Now, I think that is interesting. It's a great subplot that Dennis Franchione is meeting up with Tommy Tuberville after their a couple of years of duels in the Iron Bowl. I like Texas Tech, though. I think they'll take care of business.
My second pick is Duke to defeat Richmond. Now, the interesting thing about this, you realize that David Cutcliffe, in his coaching career, has a 56 wins and 53 losses. He has been to five bowls, and he won four and lost one. So that makes him an intriguing coach here. Now, I don't think he got those five bowls at Duke, though, did he?
No, and I'm not sure why Ole Miss fans weren't intrigued by his coaching and why that he had to leave there. I think that was one of the more disastrous things that happened to them in their recent history. But you're right. Great coach, David Cutcliffe. And I think they'll probably be able to take Richmond.
All right. Think about that. He was 4-1 in bowls at Ole Miss.
Yeah.
That's very good.
It is, and he had a great quarterback.
All right. Now, the third pick is Stanford to defeat San Jose State. Now, here's the intriguing part of that.
Right.
It's two new coaches, David Shaw, and San Jose State's coach is Mike McIntyre. Now, you say, wait a minute. Mike McIntyre is not a new coach. Well, he's in his second season. And, Jacob, I believe that if you coach at San Jose State, you ought to be given a mulligan. So I'm going to say that his is his first year to coach.
Well, that's an interesting concept right there, yeah. Just because you're at San Jose State, this is your first year, yeah. That's going to be interesting, but I think a lot of people will be looking at David Shaw to see how he does. Stanford's still got the players there. They still have Andrew Luck at quarterback. How does he do with the transition? Because obviously Jim Harbaugh is now with the 49ers.
Now, an old friend of mine said, not so fast there, my friend.
Is Lee Corso around?
Well, here's the deal. Now, you understand that San Jose State has the 27th best-ranked defensive secondary in the country.
I did not know that.
Well, that is a
fact. We haven't started playing, though.
But that's a fact.
Yeah.
All right, let me go on to the next one. I'm picking Alabama to beat Kent State.
Yeah.
Now, here's the intriguing part of that. You realize that Nick Saban is a 1973 graduate of Kent State.
Yeah.
And so, therefore, when you look at that, there's intrigue there. We could say that, there will be motivation and all that. Well, I think there will not be. The motivation is not going to carry the day, so I still believe Alabama wins that game handily.
Well, I think the motivation for Alabama, too, you look at the quarterback situation, they both want to go out there and prove that they can be the starting quarterback at Alabama. So that'll be the motivation. There's no need. If people who say Nick Saban's not going to have his team ready to play, that's way overrated. These guys are going to be ready to play for their own sake. Forget Saban. And so I think Alabama will handle Kent State. But I think that's not the biggest game of the day. The biggest game of the day to me is between A.J. McCarron and Phillip Sims.
My next pick is LSU to defeat Oregon. Now, here's the intriguing thing.
Wow, they're getting tougher.
Here's the intriguing thing. LSU would be playing for their second consecutive game at Arlington Stadium in Arlington, Texas.
That is true.
So that's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought that was. Yeah, absolutely. I think in that one, I don't know. LSU's got a lot of turmoil right now, so I just want so bad to pick Oregon in this game because of the suspension of Russell Shepard. And, of course, we don't know whether Jordan – I mean, he's not on the team right now. Doubtful that he'll be reinstated. And so you have Jarrett Lee, who's been an interception machine at times at quarterback. I like LSU, though, because I think – it's so strange. When Les Miles gets in these precarious situations, he seems to always find the light at the end of the tunnel. So I like LSU.
I'm also picking, I don't know if this is an upset or not, but I'm picking South Carolina to defeat East Carolina. You might say, why in the world would you be talking about an upset? Jacob, did you realize that the University of South Carolina has gone 2 wins, 5 losses in since 1991 against East Carolina?
I did not know that. That's very interesting.
My next pick is Auburn.
And I think, by the way, I think South Carolina will take them. But you're right. East Carolina is not the kind of team that you mess around with. And I think that game's played in Charlotte, too, which, I don't know, South Carolina maybe looking at Georgia?
And you could know that East Carolina's going to be up for that game.
Right.
The next pick is Auburn over Utah State. I'm going to say something about that in a moment when I share with you about two of the picks that I have on the board. And then I'm picking the eighth pick is Arkansas to defeat Missouri State. Now that I feel very confident about.
I think Arkansas will take Missouri State and let them know who the real sheriff is, and that Missouri is the team that they want in the SEC, not Missouri State.
And Mississippi State over Memphis. And then the last pick is the University of South Florida over Notre Dame.
Wow. Now that's an interesting pick.
Now you realize that Skip Holtz is a 1986 graduate of Notre Dame.
And I think he's the son of a coach who used to coach at Notre Dame.
I think so. I'm not sure, but yeah. It seemed like back in history there was a coach there by the name of Holtz.
Well, yeah, and I'm not as bold as you are. I'm not going to go with South Florida, but it is an interesting game, and it's certainly one Notre Dame could stub its toe again on.
Two games that I'm going to that I believe will be closer than people think.
Okay.
One of them is off of this board. That's the Auburn-Utah State game. I believe it might be closer than people think. And the other game that may be closer than people think is Oklahoma and Tulsa.
Well, I think there are going to be a lot of games this year for Auburn fans that are going to be closer than they expect. It'll be a young team this year. It's going to be a lot of growing pains. And what was the other one, Tulsa and who?
Tulsa and Oklahoma.
Yeah, Tulsa could give Oklahoma some problems, but I think Oklahoma will take care of business in the end. But a lot of good games. This is the kind of week that, except for the Georgia and Boise State, LSU, Oregon games, and then, of course, Ole Miss, BYU, those kind of games are even. There's a lot of other games that seem to be one-sided. How many upsets do we have? That's really going to be the key. How many top teams get knocked off, if any? Be interesting to see. Okay, chalkboard segment to round out the program.
Well, the old professor, Jacob, wants to give us a little, go to the chalkboard and give us a few things to think about. And this has to do with numbers.
Okay.
And we can talk about mathematics, and we can talk about geography. And we'll see that coming out in this. Now, first of all, we know that in the Big 12, which is now 10, Texas A&M looks like they're about to leave. So that will leave them at 9. And Nebraska, who has left the Big 10 or the Big 12 to go to the Big 10, who now have 12. And then TCU, who is leaving the Mountain West to go to the Big East. And Utah, who is going to who's leaving the Mountain West to go to the Pacific, the Pac-10, which is now Pac-12. That gives me an interesting view. Texas A&M, Nebraska, TCU, and Utah. Now suppose Texas A&M wins the Big 12, and they leave to go to the SEC. Suppose Nebraska wins the Big 10, coming in as their first year from the Big 12. Suppose TCU then were to win the Mountain West, and they're leaving to go to the Big East.
It's incredible.
And suppose Utah were to win the Pac-10, which is now Pac-12, and they would be the new team in that conference. So you see, we have a lot of things that just, when you add it all up, and as I said, it comes down to there are some people in college football who really are struggling with mathematics and geography.
Well, I am after that last couple of, I'm really confused.
Because TCU in the Big East, Texas A&M in the Southeastern Conference. So I've come to the conclusion. Now we're talking about the Southeastern Conference.
Becoming, I didn't know Texas was on the Pacific Coast, but it seems like they want to go out there.
Right. Well, so when you look at all this, then if Texas A&M leaves the Big 12, which will be then the big, you know, they'll have 9 teams, and they go to the SEC, that'd make the SEC having 13 teams, right?
Right.
So here's my conclusion. What is happening is that Alabama just won, a couple years ago, their 13th national championship. So consequently, they wanted to make the Southeastern Conference have as many teams as Alabama has won national championships. So consequently, I think then, if Alabama were to win their 14th national championship this year, you can look for, at the end of this season, a 14th team being added to the SEC. So I've come to the conclusion then that what is happening is that there all these numbers are trying to track the number of national championship that Alabama have, and they're trying to make the SEC become the Security Exchange Commission rather than using it as a Southeastern Conference. So that's my conclusion as I come from the chalkboard.
Okay, then. Well, on that note, we'll conclude this. I'm trying to figure all that out. I'm gonna have to listen to it again backwards and everything to figure all that out about Alabama and the championships. But I think you might be onto something. The SEC will, I think, expand soon. But a great segment again with the college football professor. We will be back in 2 weeks. Again, we won't have a show next week, but we will be back in 2 weeks. And by then, I assume a lot will have happened in the world of college football. We'll see you tomorrow.